Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome to the Spiegel and Parkin Show.
Did you guys enjoy yourself Saturday night?
Absolutely.
I had an awesome time.
It's a good time. You know what I mean?
Steph made a salad and Spiegel took three pieces of lettuce.
Mm-hmm. Complete
there.
And utter guilt salad. I didn't eat the guilt salad that I put there. Campy didn't vomit. You know, I mean, yeah. I was hoping for like a Rick Camp peanut butter induced vomit.
Until we puke is not a figure of speech. We are literally going to puke.
Why didn't you guys eat more at the show dinner?
Maybe because every time we took something on our plate, you guys were like, what are they gonna eat? They're fat.
It's funny because he's fat.
You were becoming the couch.
Who, me?
Yes.
Yeah.
You were laying on the seat of the couch.
Omar thought you were the couch.
I know. Yeah. Omar was confused.
The dog was like, "Boy, the furniture's bumpy."
Oh, indeed.
Colleen, Rick's lovely wife, brought Oreo balls for dessert.
Yeah, those are not the only part of the Oreos that are edible, but the balls might be the best part.
Matt Spiegel, Danny Parkins.
Colleen's balls are delicious.
Middays on the Score.
It was a lovely Spiegel and Parkin show dinner. This hour on The Score is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards, while this segment is brought to you by Indeed. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post the job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates in an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire. AJ Pruszynski is scheduled to join us. In just a couple of minutes, we will talk White Sox and what he's got going on this weekend at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center. Oh, he's on the line right now? We got him? Beautiful. Love talking to this guy. We've had him on the show a couple of times. Obviously a world champion with the Sox in 2005. You've seen him all over Fox Baseball broadcast. Now a White Sox ambassador. And this weekend on Saturday from 11:30 to 1, he will be signing autographs at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center with the Chicago Sports Spectacular. AJ Pruszynski back on the Score. What's up, AJ? Thanks for the time, man.
No problem. How y'all doing?
We're doing really well. These autograph shows, I used to be a huge memorabilia guy when I was a kid. What's the weirdest thing you've ever been asked to sign?
Oh, body parts, for sure. Absolutely. Number one, body parts. It's always awkward.
Yeah.
Or a phone, and then the parents standing there of a kid, and the kid asks you to sign their phone, and you're like, your parents are going to get real mad at me if I ruin your phone.
So those are probably
the two.
Yeah, so bald head of a man or breasts of a woman or everything in between?
Pretty much everything you can think of. It's kind of everything. People get real excited about autograph signing, so they think this might be their only chance, so they go for it.
Yeah, they do. So you can see AJ and have him sign your phone, which is a very millennial thing at the right.
Yes, it is.
Like, that's ridiculous.
The younger generation says, "Hey, will you sign my phone?" And then they ask you to sign the screen, and you're like, "Well, you know that won't ever come off, right?" And they're like, "I don't care." And you're like, "Okay, it's your choice." And then the parent looks at you like, "Don't sign their phone."
Yeah, I stick up for my generation a lot, but you're making me rethink some things with that.
I'm sorry. Don't
no,
do that.
That's okay. That's horrifying. Again, you could see him Saturday from 11:30 to 1. White Sox ambassador. Is that something you ever thought as a player that was going to be a future title for AJ Pruszynski?
Well, normally as a player, you think you're going to play forever. So you never think, until the day comes, you're like, I'll just keep playing until I'm 100 years old. And then you realize that, you know, you can't do that physically and more mentally. For me, I just couldn't do it anymore. So then you move on to, okay, what can I do to occupy my time and have something to do that's productive in society? So I was doing the TV thing, and the White Sox approached me this winter about doing some stuff. And I consider myself a White Sox. People forget that I played for a bunch of different teams, but everyone still considers me a White Sox. So when they approached me, I couldn't say no.
What's the thing that people remember most and come up to you with the most from your time with the Sox?
Well, I always joke that I'm remembered for two things. It's striking out in the ALCS in 05 and in the fight with Michael Barrett. So it's one of those two things that always comes up between people.
It's funny you say that, actually. I think we've talked to you about the Barrett fight before, but you know, my buddy, who's a diehard White Sox fan, when he heard I was having you on, he texted me and said, "You got to ask AJ, what was the more thrilling personal moment, the drop third strike or slapping home plate after running through Michael Barrett?" So I guess he's not that original.
Yeah, you know, those are everybody that I meet that's either a White Sox or a Cub fan, there's always something to be said about one side or the other of both of those things. So, but it makes it fun and it makes your life your life. And I wouldn't change either one of them for the world. But I mean, if you're going to ask me that question, I'll definitely say the ALCS because it led to us winning a World Series.
And that personal safe call that you gave after it was pretty sweet.
Yeah, well, there had been, that was back when the White Sox and the Cubs rivalry was going strong. So, because both teams were good and both teams wanted to win and we were coming off a World Series and they were mad because they hadn't won for 100 years. So it was fun. Those six games a year were something that all of us looked forward to.
You know, I'm hoping that that is going to come back and that the Eloy Jimenez-Jose Quintana trade might be the spark that reignites it, because Quintana's obviously going to be good for the Cubs in the short term, but Eloy looks like he might be an MVP candidate or caliber player for the White Sox in the long term. And when he hit that home run the other day against the Cubs and he said, "Oh no, like the thing I want to do is hit one against them in the regular season and the best is yet to come," I was like, all right, like let's get some north side, south side stuff going again.
I know it's kind of fallen off the map a little bit. It's kind of strange because for the 8 years I was in Chicago, I mean, those six games, there was nothing better. No regular season game I've ever played in. And I played Red Sox, Yankees. I played Dodgers, Giants, Cardinals, Cubs. No other regular season games that I ever played in lived up to that excitement. And it was you could feel it in the city, like for those 6 days, like, okay, the Cubs and the White Sox are playing. Everywhere you look, someone had a Cubs shirt or a White Sox hat or whatever it was. And you're like, man, this is what it's all about. And it was so fun.
Yeah. So why do you think it's dropped off?
Because both teams went into rebuild mode at different times. I think that was when I was going, it was both teams were trying to win every year and trying to just win every game and they didn't care. And there was more of almost a hatred in the organizations. Now you see them making trades. You already talked about it. Heck, I can't even imagine when I was there, I think we made one minor trade, but I can't imagine a trade of the Jose Quintana magnitude happening when I was playing for the White Sox.
Could you imagine a 2021, we'll say, North Side, South Side World Series?
I'd want to be there because it'd be a lot of fun. It kind of lost its luster that the Cubs finally won, so that lost its luster. It would have been nice for it to be a Cubs-White Sox World Series with the Cubs still having had one and see how the city would react to that if say, the White Sox beat them and then it just the despair on the Cub fans' faces.
I think most Cubs fans might disagree with you.
I don't know. You know, it's like the Red Sox for all those years. They didn't win, and then they won all those World Series. You know, organizations, they become spoiled when you start winning. It used to be the best before the Red Sox won. You go to Fenway, man, the fans were just so bitter. And then they switched once they won. Then they became, like, entitled, like, hey, we're going to win every year. So that's kind of the feeling I get sometimes from fans is once they win one, they feel like, man, we're just going to win every year now. It's that easy.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. I'm looking forward to becoming the gluttonous Cubs fan. Like, I put it this way, AJ. Like, you're right. The Cubs absolutely lost something when they won the World Series. But I'd love to experience winning 3 in 5 years and just, like, see how that feels for a change.
I think every organization, other than the Yankees, right? I mean, is there another organization that's done that? Maybe the Cardinals have been close?
Yeah, Giants were 3 and 6, or I guess every other, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about the Giants. So, yeah, I mean, but most of the time, I mean, it's hard. It's what people don't understand is how hard it is to win one. Forget 3 or 4 in a row. Or the Yankees had those runs where they won all those in a row. Granted, it was a different era, but even in the late 90s, early 2000s, I mean, it is hard. First of all, just to make the playoffs. That's why I never understood when people were like, oh, we made the wild card. Why are they celebrating? Well, I'll tell you why. Because you bust your butt for 8 months to get to that point. And when you do get into the playoffs, it's a special time because only a few teams get in. So every organization should treat it special, and then once you get in, anything can happen. And when you do finally win it, I mean, it's everything it's cracked up to be, and then some.
We're talking to AJ Pierzynski here on The Score. He'll be at the Chicago Sports Spectacular this weekend signing autographs, hopefully not your phone or your head, at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center. Saturday is when AJ is signing from 11:30 to 1. I read something when you did work for Fox. You said, you know, I learned why I hate the media, and now I'm a part of them. I always think that dynamic is hilarious when the players who are not really known for being the most media-friendly become members of the media. What is the worst part about my business? What's the worst part about the media?
I actually always liked the media. I always was able to enjoy the media. The only time I ever got tired of the media was some days when you come in and they catch you right after you've had a bad game. And you just sometimes need a break from them. But I always enjoyed the media. I never really had that big of a problem. I think it was more of I never understood what kind of job they had to do until you're a part of it. And I never understood why the media would get mad if you were 5 minutes late to a press conference if you were doing something. Now I understand, because now if there's a guy 5 minutes late and we're supposed to do an interview, I'm like, where the heck is this guy? Why is he not here on time? Forgetting that as a player, you know, I had things to do that and I couldn't always be there right when I said I would. So the media to me, the hardest part for me is just remembering, and it should be the easiest part, how hard baseball is, but there are times where you just watch a guy botch something and you're like, man, I really wanted to destroy this guy, but then you think, man, okay, this guy has a hard job, and you forget how hard it is sometimes. And then I think the farther you get away from the home plate and the diamond, the easier it looks. And I know sometimes I'm sitting up there and I'm like, gosh, why can this guy not hit this? Why can they not hit this guy? It looks so easy, but then you remember, man, when I was in the box, I couldn't hit that guy either.
Right, no, I think that's a great point. And for someone like me, I'm just a fan of sports. I never played anything at a very high level, and certainly not baseball. So I always have to remind myself, like, okay, you can criticize people based on facts, but you've got to be fair, because I could not even, like, you know, I quit baseball when I got hit between the shoulder blades in sixth grade. You know what I mean? So you always have to have that little barometer, I think, when you're realizing, like, these are all the best of the best of what they do.
Well, I try to. That's funny. If I would have quit the first time someone threw me between the shoulder blades, I'd have quit at like 8 years old. So
it hurts,
I wouldn't
even
made it to sixth grade. So no, that is a great point, and it's a great kind of way to look at it. But I think baseball is kind of judged differently, because everybody plays little league, and everybody comes up to me and says, "Oh, I would have made it if I didn't get hurt, or if I didn't do this, or if I didn't do that." And I always think to myself, "Well, yeah, you would have made it if you were good enough." So I mean, the thing about baseball that's different from like football, basketball, even hockey to an extent, is people see baseball players and they're normal sized guys. You look at a football player, he's 6'6", 330 pounds, and runs a 4.5 40. Basketball players are 7 feet tall. I think that's the one thing about baseball that people forget is how hard it really is, especially at the top of the levels.
Yeah, you said the thing, you said especially mentally at the beginning of the conversation when you decided to walk away from the game, more so than the physical side. Like, why did the mental side of the game get so tough for you?
Well, you have to understand one thing about me is that I played the game different than most people did. I played, and people that watch me know how I played. I played odd in the fact that I had to almost hate the other team that I was playing against, even if it was like my best friend on the mound. Like, I was facing Mark Burley when he was in Toronto, and I was like, gosh, I want to get hit off this guy so bad. And I love Mark to death. He's, you know, a good friend of mine. So, and I had to play that. And towards the end of my career, I couldn't fake that, because that was the only way I could motivate myself. And when you get older and you get almost to 40 years old and you're out there playing, you're like, man, I'm having a hard time faking this. And I could never just go through the motions. I always had to have an emotion. I had to have a fire. And every day it got to a point where I just couldn't manufacture that anymore.
It was always the reputation, right? Teammates loved him. You love him if he's on your team. You hate to play against him, which I always thought was the ultimate compliment as a player. Was there anything about you that was like a widespread belief that you feel like was always a misconception, whether it was fans, the media, players in the game, anything like that?
I don't know. I've kind of lived a nice life off of some of those reputations, so I can't really say that there's a misconception. I think one of the things I think that gets misconstrued is that I didn't care and that I didn't respect the people I played against. With or against. I mean, I love my teammates more than anything, and I always wanted to win more than anything. And I think sometimes that got misconstrued into where, you know, this guy doesn't care about other people sometimes, or even on the other team. But I always cared about my teammates, and I think that if you ask him, I mean, I'll fight to the end of the earth for someone that's on my side. Now, you could be on my side one day and get traded the next day and be on the other side, and I want to kick your butt. But that's just the way I was always taught, and that's just the way I had to do it.
A few more minutes with A.J. Pierzynski, who's an ambassador for the White Sox, and he's signing autographs on Saturday from 11:30 to 1 at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center. It's the Chicago Sports Spectacular going on there this weekend. You have made no qualms about wanting to be a manager someday. How do you make that jump, or do you think you could jump right to the big chair?
Why not? Everyone else is doing it. I saw Aaron Boone go from ESPN Sunday Night Baseball right to the Yankees, right?
Yep.
I can't go from Fox to managing a team. It seems like everyone's doing it. Gabe Kapler, no experience, is doing it. I mean, there's a bunch of guys. Mike Matheny did it. Robin Ventura did it. Brad Ausmus did it. I don't think you forget how to play the game. I think, especially with managing nowadays, the biggest thing with managing the teams is, one, you have to have communication and be open with your players. Players respect you a lot more, and this is one of the big things when I played is, as long as the manager and the coaches and the front office were honest with me and just said, hey, you stink, and this is what we think, and this is what you need to work on, I might not like it, but you know what? I can respect it, and I can deal with it, and I can go home and work on whatever it was. When all of a sudden you hear things from the media or from another player, another coach, that, you know, this guy's saying this about you, and you're like, well, just say it to my face. You know, we might have a problem, but at least we'll work it out and go from there. And then I think the way front offices are going, I think you also have to have the ability now as a manager to get along with your front office, but you have to have enough self-belief and ego almost. I don't know if ego is the right word, but where you can get into an argument with the GM if you're the manager and see both sides of it. I think that's where a lot of times people get messed up because they don't understand that, hey, you know what? I can argue with my GM and still be friends with them afterwards, and we can still work together, even though we don't 100% agree on everything.
Now, the collaboration of the job is obviously huge here. How much Ozzie Guillen would you have in you as a manager?
What people don't understand is Ozzie was really great on the field and in the dugout. Like, he could run a team and run a bench and a bullpen and all that really well. The problem Ozzie had was, and I love Ozzie, Ozzie just couldn't know when to stop sometimes. And that was in the media and just in general. And you look at Ozzie and you say, you know what, Ozzie won a World Series and Ozzie did a lot of great things, and Ozzie is still a friend of mine. I love Ozzie to death. But there were times where you're like, Ozzie, just stop and just think about what you're doing or saying. And I think that he didn't have those limits, and I think it ultimately caught up to him, especially in Miami.
Right. It seems kind of crazy to me that he's not more involved in baseball in some capacity.
I agree. The game needs people like Ozzie Guillen, and I think the game misses Ozzie Guillen. So it's a shame that he is not involved somewhere as a coach. I know he's doing some broadcast stuff, but as a coach, as a consultant, as something for some organization, because he's a very smart baseball person. And the thing about Ozzie is he can be a people person when he wants to be. And when he's that, he's as good as it gets.
Are you doing any sort of coaching for the White Sox? Are you helping any of these young players? What's your role on the field, if any?
I'm coaching the Premier Bandits. They're an 11-year-old travel baseball team right now. I'm the assistant to the assistant coach of that. And that takes
a lot
of my coaching time.
Wow. You're really starting from the bottom.
That's right. So you asked me if I'd work my way up. So I helped coach my son's travel baseball team here in Orlando. And I did it last fall, and now I'm doing it this spring. And I don't want to be the head coach because there's too much pressure from the parents on, you know, why little Johnny doesn't get to play and why little Johnny only got 4 at-bats over the weekend instead of 6 at-bats like little Dave got. So, you know, that stuff I just can defer, but I can handle all the other stuff like practice and all that.
Yeah, I mean, do you like give it to the umpire if you squeeze in your pitcher? What happened?
No, but I do get a lot of laughs out of it when people do that, because it kind of makes me chuckle when these guys, especially like my son plays Little League also, so they're volunteer umpires and they're dads, and they might miss a call and people go crazy, and I'm like, dude, it's just a Little League game. It doesn't even matter. Everyone makes the playoffs, so that makes me laugh, and I get a chuckle out of that. But the travel ball is a little more intense because they're paid umpires and they're trying, but I always let the head coach handle that. That's why I'm the assistant coach.
Very smart. White Sox fans are pretty optimistic for the future. How optimistic should they be?
They should be optimistic. I think Rick and Kenny have done a good job making trades, making moves. Now, the question is, how many of these guys will pan out? I saw Luis Robert hurt his thumb already. So he's out for, 3 months?
Yep.
It's things like that that you just can't count on. You just don't know who's gonna make it and who's not. There is a difference between A-ball and AA and the big leagues. And I played with some guys in the minor leagues that were the best players I've ever seen, and then when it got to the big leagues or even the high minor league level, they just didn't make it, and you don't know why. And they were way more talented than guys that made it. There's a difference in a mental capacity, not capacity, but a mental aspect, the way they look at the game, and it changes. And when the pressure gets on, I always tell my son, and I tell people like on the team that I play on, I'm like, when the heat gets turned on, you'll see who can play and who can't, because anyone can play in practice and anyone can play when it doesn't matter. But when the lights come on, you'll find out who can do it.
Well, AJ, I love the conversation and catching up, man. People should go see you at the Donald D. Stevens Convention Center, get some autographs from 11:30 to 1 this Saturday. And you're going to still be on Fox, right?
Yes, sir. April 28th, Yankees Angels will be my first game.
Awesome. Well, we'll have to check back with you throughout the season, man. Sox fans love hearing from you.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. Come see me on Saturday, and make sure you paint that River Green for me, you know, since I'm coming in town on St. Patrick's Day.
I don't think that is going to be a problem. Chicago okay. and St. Patrick's Day, I think the beers will be flowing. Thanks, AJ.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate you, man. So he will be at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center Saturday from 11:30 to 1. And I like him on Fox. And we should have him on the show and on the station some more. That conversation brought to you by CeCe's. New crust, new sauce, New York-style pizza. Now at CeCe's. Grab an extra large slice of their new meatball pepperoni pizza and new cheesecake brownies for dessert. There's so much to love on the buffet for just five and change. Only at CeCe's. Prices vary. Restrictions apply. More NFL rumors coming from around the league. Plenty of football to react to as the Bears have a new kicker, tight end, and number one wide receiver. Plus, we can talk some White Sox if you want off that conversation with AJ Pierzynski. I saw NBC Chicago broadcasting 17 AAA games this year. Very smart local media news there. Very smart.
It's a lot of Eloy home runs to make sure you get.
That's right. That's very smart. You know, and you know why that's smart? Because even if there's not a huge demand for like that product in terms of ratings, it's a really good thing for their business partner with the Sox in terms of getting people to know them. And live sports anything is better than some of the other types of programming that a lot of the local channels have to have when they don't have standard games. So like even if they're getting to a small niche audience of diehard White Sox fans that'll want to watch prospects – that's the type of thing that pays huge dividends down the road when, oh, now I'm more familiar with these prospects and I'll watch them more when they're in the big leagues and I'll watch those games when they're on NBC Chicago in the future. Like, that's a savvy media move to broadcast that number of games for the White Sox future. It's going to be fun to see how those guys develop at the varying levels of the organization this year. So appreciate AJ Pierzynski. I'll transition with the afternoon show coming up at 1. Spiegel and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Spiegel and Parkins on the Score, brought to you by CeCe's. New crust, new sauce, New York-style pizza. Now at CeCe's, grab an extra-large slice. Their new meatball pepperoni pizza and new cheesecake brownies for dessert. There's so much to love on the buffet for just five and change. Only at CeCe's. Prices vary. Restrictions apply. Appreciate AJ Pierzynski for coming on the show today. Campy, fill me in on some of the – we have Paul Richardson going to Washington. Is that correct?
Yeah, 5 years, $40 million, half of it guaranteed. So $20 million guaranteed for Paul Richardson.
Man, he got paid too. It's really interesting that Sammy Watkins and Allen Robinson and Kirk Cousins would all sign three-year deals, but some of the less proven players would sign longer deals like Trey Burton or Paul Richardson.
Yeah, I wonder if it's the balance of age with accomplishment level to that point, to where obviously with Robinson, part of the reason his money wasn't as high was because of coming off the ACL and he figures he can cash in again. I don't know how old Richardson is offhand, and same with Cousins, but it could be the same principle.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, and I would think if I'm a younger player who's unproven and it's my first payday, I would sacrifice years off of the next deal for more money now. Because you never know how many paydays you're going to actually get in the NFL, right? Like, Allen Robinson had at least more money on his rookie deal and is hitting free agency at such a young age. And he is coming off with – he's got a Pro Bowl year under his belt. So, like, that puts him in that tier where Allen Robinson's saying, I'm going to sign again at 27, 28, right? So, for him, yeah, you could take the biggest payday now, but – it's still speculative on Trubisky. It's still speculative on Nagy. It's still speculative on a passing offense in Chicago. So I'll take my money now, but I'll hit free agency again at 27, hopefully healthy, coming off a few good years. Maybe the Bears re-sign him or not. But I would feel like if I was guys like on that tier, I'd bet on myself. And if I was guys who hadn't been paid, like Paul Richardson or Albert Wilson, I'd say – yeah, 5 years in Washington, 4 years in Miami, whatever. Just, like, give me as much money as possible right now, even if I'm locking myself into not as good of a situation.
Yeah, it's really interesting how initially you'd always think shorter deal, the team wanted that. The team wanted that. They want the flexibility. But now it seems like you're starting to see the players take that same thought process. And maybe that's part of what fuels as much movement as there is in the NFL, just as much as the cap in and of itself.
We also have, and a texter pointed this out, and it's a good point, we also do have the uncertainty of the new CBA coming up after 2021. So it's possible that agents are advising guys to take shorter deals now in an expectation of, hey, there might be a work stoppage anyway. So no one's getting paid there anyway. So you may as well be a free agent so the new money comes in afterwards and we can adjust to our time then.
And maximize the cash beforehand.
Right. And exactly. And but for Kirk Cousins, that one, no one's turning down that deal. What did he get guaranteed?
86. 80, 3 for 86.
3 for 86 guaranteed. So an $86 million guarantee. And help me out. There's a lot going on here today. Biggest guarantee for a QB before that is Stafford? Because the highest average annual value was Garoppolo. But I want to say that this is, I'm doing this off the top of my head, guys. I apologize. But I believe the highest guarantee, that shatters the guarantee record for a quarterback, right?
I would think so. I'm trying to find the number right now. Yeah, Stafford, 92 guaranteed.
Okay, 92. So I was right that Stafford was there, but it didn't shatter the record.
$50 million signing bonus and the potential for 92 guaranteed. So,
oh, but that's different. This is fully guaranteed. Like, this is a fully guaranteed deal, right?
Right.
For Kirk Cousins. So, yeah, in terms of full guarantee at signing, it's the biggest ever.
Yes.
But in terms of total guarantees in a contract, it's not.
Correct.
There's a difference there. But it's a brave new world. And the new NFL salary landscape is going to be crazy because no one knows what it is. And the league has gone up $10 million every year. Like, you look at the cap last 5 years, $10 million, $10 million, $9 million, $10 million, like, every single year. It just keeps going up because the revenues keep growing. So that's why all these teams have all this cap space. Like, if you're in a bad salary cap space in this year and you're not the Eagles, because, like, the Eagles have to shed some salary cap. But if you're in a bad salary cap position in this NFL, you've been doing a horrible job because the cap keeps going up. Now, some teams that are closer to the cap have at least been winning a lot of games. Like, the Chiefs don't have as much cap space. They've been winning a lot of games. The Steelers have had to spend some money. They've won a lot of games. But in terms of what is actually happening in the NFL right now, the three-year deals make sense because the landscape is going to be changing a lot going forward. But huge Bears news today. We'll keep talking about it with you. Derek in Avalon Park is on the score. What's up, Derek?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man.
Quick question. With the signing of Burton, right, what is that basically saying about drafting – Shaheen with the number 2 pick in 2017's draft?
Wait, well, what do you mean? What why it, they're different tight ends, okay? Like, I read a scouting report earlier. I'm going to pull it back up because it's for my guy in Kansas City, okay? So I'm going to the Chiefs last year ran a 2 tight end set between 38 and 40% of the time. Burton will complement Shaheen. Shaheen is the inline guy with Burton the move tight end. Burton can line up everywhere and win underneath. And Robinson was plagued by a bad quarterback, but he's a good wide receiver on the outside who can win consistently. With the run-pass options that Nagy runs, you need a tight end that can win underneath and a field stretcher like Robinson. So what you're going to see a lot this year, Derek, of Cameron Meredith and Allen Robinson as big outside receivers, and Shaheen and Burton both as in 2 tight end sets, with Burton split out sometimes into the slot that he did in Philly, especially when Jordan Matthews was hurt. He's actually played some slot wide receiver. And then with Tariq Cohen as a pass catcher out of the backfield, you're going to have big mismatches and speed mismatches pretty much all over the field. Now, you don't have the true burner, but you do have a lot of versatility in your pass catching game. But I don't think it says a lot about Shaheen because I think that they plan to play them together a huge percentage of the time.
All right, I'll take that.
Okay, fair enough. I thought you maybe had a response there. But yeah, that's what it is. It's, and if you missed that part earlier in the show, that we were talking about that earlier. It's Trubisky needed 2 things this offseason. He needed an offensive coaching upgrade, and he needed a pass catching upgrade. Like, pass-catching talent. And a lot of people said it'll be 3 wide receivers. We always talked about it on this show as pass-catching playmakers. They already had it in Tariq Cohen out of the backfield. We knew they were bringing back Cam Meredith. Robinson was the best option for the fit for the system because while Sammy Watkins is a burner, he's had nagging multiple injuries. Robinson's had this one. He's back. And as a true number one, he's the guy that you can always throw it to in the red zone and you could throw it to when he's covered. Sammy Watkins is more of a like down the field playmaker type. So in that sense, Robinson's the more pure number one than Sammy Watkins. But there's a debate like in NFL circles about Sammy Watkins versus Allen Robinson as to who's better. Like, I think the Chiefs offense has the potential to be the scariest offense in the NFL in a year or two. Like, if Pat Mahomes is good, he's got the strongest arm before this year in the history of the NFL Combine with two of the 10 fastest wide receivers in the NFL in Sammy Watkins and Tyreek Hill. The second best tight end in the NFL, who's the best yards after the catch tight end in the NFL in Travis Kelce, and the second place finisher for NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year, who's also a pass catcher out of the backfield in Kareem Hunt, and Andy Reid to scheme it open. So, like, Watkins did make sense for the Chiefs because they already have a number one in Tyreek Hill. They already have a number two in Travis Kelce. So you add another guy who's as fast as Tyreek Hill, you can't double team both of them. So that's why Sammy Watkins made more sense for the Chiefs because of the speed and with Mahomes' arm strength. But in terms of most systems and most fits, I actually think Allen Robinson works more because he's more of a pure number one. Sammy Watkins is not going to be the number one in Kansas City. Like, Tyreek Hill was a monster last year. 75 catches, 17 yards a catch. I think seven touchdowns. Like, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Sammy Watkins make them potentially terrifying on the offensive side of the ball. So that's why I think Robinson fit better here than he did there. We still have some audio from Allen Robinson that I want to get to. It explains how the ACL changed him and what he was looking at in potential teams. And I think one of the teams that he was talking about, you'll be interested in when that applies to the Bears. So you'll hear actually from Allen Robinson before transition coming up on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Spiegel and Parkins on The Score, brought to you by Indeed. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates in an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire. I'll do transition with Dan Bernstein coming up in 15 minutes. And then I am going home. And you will hear from me tomorrow on the station and on Twitter, and I'll be on TV tonight from the United Center, and I'll answer a lot of your questions at a later date and time. So that's all I can say for now, and I hope you all understand that. I wish, frankly, that I could say more, but that is all I could say about any of that. But yeah, I'll be on TV tonight from the UC, the Clippers. Probably not sticking around for much of that game.
You don't want to see Boban?
I mean, maybe I could see him warm up before the game.
If you could get a picture with Boban, that would be...
Yeah?
That'd be like the peak of awkward in one photo.
Oh, really? Thank you, Campy. I appreciate that.
Well, he provides a large amount of that.
Oh, thank you. So he's like 80-20 Boban awkwardness to mine? Maybe 70-30? I appreciate that. We've got two cuts from Allen Robinson. One on the ACL experience. The audio's okay, pretty good enough to play. And then the other is about teams and things that he was looking for when he was talking about the Niners and the Bears. Play the one about the ACL and the personal growth. It's the longer one on Allen Robinson, please.
Outside of football completely, how are you better in yourself?
And I think that was the biggest thing of me this year, you know, is because You get so caught into yourself as a player where I have to do this for myself. I have to be better. I have to do this. And now the only thing that I could provide this year was to be a great teammate. Like, that was literally my only value to my team this year.
So for me, being able to get that joy, you know, talking to Keelan Cole and Westbrook and, you know, Bouye and Ramsey and those guys, being there with those guys, you know, and even Kalej, you know, being able to have those conversations with those guys in certain times on the sideline, you know, I mean, that just elevates me, you know, as a person in itself, you know, to whereas looking back at it like, wow, you know, like this thing is bigger than me. And when it comes to bigger than me, I just mean as far as not even gaining the respect of my teammates. It's like I know my teammates, how my teammates look at me as a person, because especially being a receiver, you know, you can get caught in the, you know, I want the ball, I need the ball, I need this, I need that, I need this, I need that. You know, so for my teammates to really be able to see that from me this year, I think also meant a lot to them as well. And it actually meant a lot to me.
I think it's always cool when guys can use adversity for personal growth. And the Bears have done their homework on the medicals, obviously. He is not cleared for all football activities, but he is expected to be able to be ready in time for training camp. So there should not be a pup list situation or anything like that with Allen Robinson. And that would be a huge miss if that changes and is not the case, because they can't afford that. The Bears need to progress. And to progress is for Mitch Trubisky to progress and for him to progress. As I say that word too many times, he needs Trey Burton and Allen Robinson to be huge upgrades from what was there last year. And again, we'd expect Deion Sims to not be on this team much longer. But when he was listing attributes of attractive teams, listen to how he was describing Chicago and San Francisco. This was also Allen Robinson. This from Sirius NFL yesterday.
They bring in Jimmy Garoppolo. You see Richard Sherman. He doesn't even take a tour. He signs in San Francisco. Is that a team that would be intriguing to Allen Robinson?
Most definitely. You know, like you said, you know, that's a team that's for sure moving in the right direction. You know, like you said, has some of the same things that Chicago has, you know, when it comes down to quarterback, you know, offensive-minded head coach, you know, football city, you know, tradition. You know, it's a lot of, you know, it has that thing as well. Again, there's so many good situations out there. You know, I just got to narrow it down and make the best one.
It's Allen Robinson talking about the Bears being a good football situation. Now, don't get it twisted. They're not a great football situation. Like, they're offering him a lot of money. So I'm not doing cartwheels over that. I'm not naive. I don't have my head in the sand on that one, right? The Bears made an aggressive opening bid to Allen Robinson, put themselves at the front of the pack, and he chose him. But the Niners did the same thing. And that matters. Young GM, young head coach, young quarterback, upside, probably closer to winning because Garoppolo is further along than Trubisky being 3 years ahead of him on the NFL clock. And Robinson chose the Bears over the Niners. Now, maybe the Bears offered him $4 million in guarantees, and that's all that it came down to. Possibly. But I really feel like bigger than Trey Burton, bigger than Allen Robinson, certainly bigger than Cody Parkey, bigger than a draft pick or anything like that. The idea here is the Bears organization is in a place where legitimately you can have optimism about the direction moving forward. And that people will want to come here, and that it will be because of the offensive side of the ball. Maybe they can't fix the pass rush this year. And maybe the defense takes a step back. But if the defense takes one step back and the offense takes three steps forward, sign me up. Because you can figure out that next year. Like, they're not winning the Super Bowl this year. They've just made a couple of nice moves today. But they've made a couple of nice moves today that complement the nice move they made at coach, which I think complements the nice move that they made at quarterback. And when you start making moves that are all linear like that and all along the same line, and they line up with what's going on in the NFL right now, that's where you start to upgrade the value of the stock. That's where you start to say, yeah, let me invest a little bit more into that. Instead of going 5%, I might go 10%. Like, it's just, you get a little bit more bullish. You just get a little bit more excited. You upgrade it a little bit. Three-star prospect becomes a four-star prospect after they show out at an all-star game or a showcase or something like that. Like, if they hit in the draft, I'm interested to see at training camp this year, because last year at training camp, there was not a ton of buzz, even with Trubisky. But I think it was Fox and being upset about the draft and the trade and all of that. Like, I'm wondering this year, you've got the number one receiver, You've got the two tight ends. You've got the QB who is looking to make the leap. You've got the exciting young head coach. If people like this draft, I'm wondering if we'll have week one buzz or if they'll still need to prove it on the field and show it. I don't know the answer to that. I'm hopeful that people will be optimistic, but it's one of those things where, man, I am cautiously optimistic for the Bears and their direction. And I've been more optimistic on Trubisky and Pace than a lot of you guys, but the potential for them to be innovative offensively is so exciting to me. To have a high ceiling offensively is just different. And it's a sustainable high ceiling. Like, in theory, the 24-year-old receiver and the 26-year-old tight end with the 23-year-old quarterback and the 39-year-old head coach and the youngest general manager in the NFL with the second-year scat back running back in Tariq Cohen and the second-year tight end in Adam Shaheen. Like, it's, in theory, the young nucleus that you build with. If it works. And it might not, and then everybody gets fired.
Yeah, and like what I wonder is how many of those things need to hit for you, not this year, maybe not even next year, to end up being good. Because they're going to be entertaining no matter what. I really think they're going to be entertaining this year no matter what. But I wonder what percent of that core needs to hit. Like, we always talk about it in terms of baseball prospects. You know, it's a much lower percentage there. But what percent needs to come together for the Bears to be good?
Trubisky needs to come together. Nagy needs to come together. And, I mean, for now, Robinson, right? They're relying on Robinson way more than they are Trey Burton. Robinson needs to come back healthy and be more 2015 than 16. Or, excuse me,
Yeah,
2015
and 16.
Yeah, sorry. 2017 was the ACL. 2016 was the down year with Blake Bortles and the coaching firing and the two coordinators. 2015 was the 1,400-yard, 80-catch, 14-touchdown season. Yeah, Robinson needs to come back and be a legit number one. Trubisky needs to take the leap. Nagy needs to not be over his head. And Pace needs to hit in the draft. It's a lot of things. Like, and here's the thing, Campy. The math is still against it all working because of what you're saying. Like, if you had to say, does this core ever go to a Super Bowl? The math still says no, right? Most teams don't. Most rebuilds don't work. Most people in the NFL get fired. The math still says no. My point is, we're moving in the direction of like stacking moves on top of each other that makes sense, where it's getting closer and closer to swinging in the direction where I'd bet on yes, it working. But we won't have the answer to that, probably not this entire season. To me, this whole year is, again, about validating the coach-quarterback connection under Ryan Pace. The end of the year, you feel good about those three individuals, Pace, Nagy, Trubisky. You'll feel good about the Bears. And on that question, we'll be able to say, you know what? New answer. I would bet on this team winning a Super Bowl or getting to a Super Bowl at least or winning divisions in the next 2 years. Like, if we still feel good about those three people at the end of this season, that's when I think we can have the conversation of whether the calculus on that changes a little bit. I'll talk to Dan Bernstein for Transition coming up on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.